Well, this morning we welcome Reverend David Billings to our pulpit. David Billings has been an anti-racist trainer and organizer for the People's Institute of Survival and Beyond since 1983. He's worked with anti-racist organizing groups across the country, including the Anti-Racist Alliance in New York and New Jersey, and numerous educational and faith-based groups. We welcome him to our pulpit, and then, as I said earlier, following this, he will be down in Fellowship Hall talking about his book, Deep Denial, and the work that he is doing in even more depth. David, welcome to our pulpit.
Good morning, everyone. Glad to be here at this very historic church. Just reading your walls here is a lesson in history. And so I am very glad to be here. I'm here to talk about racism in the United States, which has been the biggest stain on this nation since its inception. And unfortunately, the church has been one of the most supportive institutions of the racial stain that still perplexes us. It's been 60 some odd years, as I talk about in my book, since my uncle was murdered in Macomb, Mississippi, where I again live with my wife, Marjorie Freeman, who is here today. And the murder set off a torrent of violence and bloodshed and hatred. And I was a teenager wondering, how does this jive with the church message that I'm receiving on Sunday morning? I was perplexed. I didn't say anything, but I wondered, how could on both sides of the great divide worship the same Jesus? You know, where is the, how do you reconcile the fact that Jesus was being praised by those who had committed the sin of racism against my uncle, and it was also the church that had justified for a long time the racial divide in this country, made it rhyme, as we say. I never got an answer, but I kept thinking about it. And when the members of the Ku Klux Klan came to our home, my uncle's home, in Macomb, 1962, and seven brothers and two sisters were gathered in a circular fashion, and they asked the question. The leadership didn't have to wear robes or anything. You know, they were all known. We knew who they were. The question became from them, looking at us, what would you have us do? What would you have us do? I was listening, because I wasn't old enough to be in the circle, as they say, but I was listening. And they went all around the circle, and they got to my Uncle James, who was a World War II veteran who had seen death and bloodshed. And Uncle James said, "We don't want you to do nothing. We're not that kind of family." And I literally breathed a gasp, because I didn't know what kind of family we were. We were loving, we were kind, we were church-going, we were Christian. We were all of that which a segregated Mississippi demanded of a white family. We weren't that kind of family. I took that as my invitation to follow my inclination to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ anywhere I could find a welcoming audience, and sometimes where the audience was not so welcoming. You know, the title of the book I wrote, Deep Denial, was really a reflection on those of us who were called ourselves Christian. We were white in a segregated society, and today we're white in a segregated society. The laws have come down, the signs have been taken up, but in many ways, we're as segregated today as we were then. My mentors in this, a few family members, but were largely TV preachers. I would watch the 6 o'clock news. And again, I didn't say anything, but I watched as Dr. King and others took the incredible risk that they took. And they did it in the name of Christ. And silently, I said to myself, that's the church that I want to serve. That's the church that is calling me to be a minister of Jesus Christ. Years passed. And I keep thinking, as once again we are often torn by hatred and division. You don't have to hate to be a part of the racial arrangement in this country. You just have to be. You know, if we don't speak out, if we don't welcome in, things remain the same. A lot of us feel that working against racism means being a certain type or a certain action. Really, those of us who work against racism can do that in a million different ways. We have to ask ourselves the hard questions. We have to ask, what is it about us that still speaks to a segregated state, a segregated church? In large measure, not just the church, but every institution of this society, even as we have changed somewhat, have not changed fundamentally. The divisions among us are incredible. They involve where we live, where we go to school, where we worship, you know, where we put our money, everything about it, and the nation continues to suffer. We cannot be a nation founded under God, as our pledge says, if we allow racism to continue. What can we do? Many of us ask. You know, it's no one particular thing. It's hosting other churches. It's speaking out in the workplace. It's, I taught in the School of Social Work briefly at NYU. And when I would do this course on race and power and poverty, the students would flock to it. And I'd say, why are you here? Says, you know, surely you know what profession you're in, that if you get a job in this field, it's going to be in a community of color. How are you prepared to do that? And they said, we don't know, because we don't teach how to deal with race at this great institution. And it was shocking to me, maybe not so much, but I knew. I asked the faculty, why don't you teach about race? All of your students are going to work in communities of color just about. And they said something very interesting. These are people very renowned in their field. And they said, we teach what we were taught, and we were never taught about what is racism. Racism is more than prejudice. It's more than how you feel about somebody. That's a part of it. But ultimately, it's about an arrangement that, since the very beginnings, is privilege to some and oppression to others. I couldn't help but notice on your wall that you were founded, 1784? In 1790, the first Naturalization Act will be one of the first acts passed by the new nation. It has an interesting phrase in it. And the phrase is that you have to be white in order to begin the process of citizenship. That this country was open only to those men and women who are designated white. That's a paraphrase. You might read it, because if you were like me, I was never taught that. I never saw that in any history that I was given. And yet, it described perfectly the roots of the great divide that still haunts this country. Our participation in this has been called sinful, it has been called oppression, it has been called many things. It has rarely been called, however, as an opportunity to reconcile ourselves with the Christ, to become one, if one will, with Jesus and his message. And so it is again. It's never too late, but we have to be willing to speak the truth. You know, and in this country, we're not told the truth, you know. I remember that Jack Nicholson line that you see on TV, said, "You can't handle the truth." Well, in large measure, that's been true in the church, particularly. The church is the only institution in this society that professes a reconciliation between light and darkness, a reconciliation between hate and acceptance, a reconciliation between what has gone on before and what happens now. It's this reconciliation. No other institution, as I said, makes that claim, but the church does. And so it is incumbent upon us to keep educating ourselves about the nature of racism and what we can do. Even when we're in all-white settings, as I've often been, there's much that we can do to speak out against racism, but internally, but also externally. The church still has great force in this society. You can see it in just about every facet of America's life. So, you know, I am glad to be touring the country. I've been on the road along with Marjorie Freeman for 16 months. I have done a talk at some 80 or 90 settings, some universities, some churches, and everywhere I go, there are people who want to do something and yet are not sure what to do. And the reason that we're not sure is that we don't really focus in on trying to come up with our own approach to racism and teach ourselves, you know, what is going on in this nation. We get defensive, you know, we try to justify, we try to argue, we try to talk people down, but it's something that if we are open to exploring, I think we could undo racism, as we say in the People's Institute. The sitting out here today amongst you are some people who want to do something about this great stain that still marks our nation. You might have felt like, well, I've been doing things. Well, we've got to do the organizing to bring others that go along with us. So, deep denial. It was the only thing that wasn't changed by my book. That was the title. As editors took their swipe at it and did it better than I wrote it. But they kept the title, Deep Denial, because it has become like a psychological defense mechanism in this country where we all speak our appointed parts and our appointed roles. But we have to begin to recognize what that denial is. And in those of us who are Christian, we have to know that the denial around racism is the denial of Jesus Christ. You know, we know, if we're honest with ourselves, that Jesus would not have it this way, would not have such dramatic disparities in the outcomes of every system in this society, whether it is health, whether it is education, whether it is wealth, whether it is the role of the church. In all of these institutional arrangements, there are these dramatic differences in outcomes. We have to be honest about that. We cannot lean on the cliches of the past. We must invite the promise of the future. So, you know, I wrote this book after much urging, and at first, my response for years and years was, well, just because you can preach doesn't mean you can, you know, write. But finally someone said, well, it's incumbent upon you to write what you're understanding. The book's largely for white people. It's what are the messages that we receive that keep us imprisoned by this sin of racism? What do we know about it? When were we taught it? It's the great unlearned. We don't teach it. You know, we don't prepare ourselves. So if we begin to do that, if every system, every institution in this country all of a sudden said, it wouldn't be all of a sudden, but if they said, we're going to wipe out racism, you're not going to be a doctor in this country without understanding the impact of race on your health care. You're not going to be a lawyer arguing before the highest courts. You say, well, that's never going to happen. Well, it happened in a lot of different fields in this country where those in charge of educating its clientele, those said, you know, we cannot live any longer with the outcomes of our practice, be it health or law or theology or anything else. We've not yet said that in our seminaries. Maybe some have, but most have not. We are not prepared for race. People stick us out there and say, swim, you know, and it's going to take more than that. So I hope that you continue the work that this church has done. I hope you expand on it. I hope you take seriously the impact that First Pres Caldwell, New Jersey might have in its midst right now, a person who is going to lead this nation in overcoming the sin of racism. I feel, after 60 some odd years of doing this, this book tour has taken me to 90 different venues. It's more or less the same anywhere you go. It is not different. You shouldn't beat yourself up over it. You should decide that you're going to do something about it and work strategically with others who are doing the same thing and ask for help when you need it. Not everybody is educated around this sufficiently to lead a movement for change. So that's my 1 minute of ministry. And I hope that some of you can stay for the question and answer period, the luncheon that we're going to have, knowing that undoing racism is something that we can do. We just haven't put ourselves to the task in the way that we must. So thank you very much for letting me occupy this great pulpit for these few minutes. And I thank you very much.